Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's ever tackled that one.
Oh, yeah. No.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, man.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Well, welcome to the show, Braden.
Yeah, thank you.
It's I know that you were recommended to come on the show. Like, it was going to be an interesting conversation. So,
yeah.
I'm glad that you made the time to fit it in and get you on board. And it's nice to talk to the younger trades that are coming into the industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, it's amazing.
So, yeah. No, I heard from Dan. We were talking back when he was on, and you know, he's saying, you know, it'd be good to get apprentice kind of perspective.
Yep.
Of how things are going, how you know, the day-to-day life.
Yep.
And yeah, just wanted to come and share my story.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. I got some questions.
Yeah.
It's not like I was standing off mic. It's not a test.
No
opinions. Yeah. Braden Churchill is here, apprentice carpenter at Covenant Construction. IG, you can find them at Braden Churchill, and then also you can find them on LinkedIn, and also you can find a bunch of them at Covenant Construction on IG. And then I just happened to choose Covenant's t-shirt, right? So yeah. I'm wearing their long sleeve t-shirt. So thanks so much. I think it was Chris that brought it for me long time ago. Unleash your voice on the Construction Life podcast community. Are you passionate about the world of construction, trades, and all things building related? The Construction Life Podcast wants to hear from you. Leave us a review, share your thoughts, insights, and experiences on your favorite podcast channel. Your review fuels our mission to create engaging and informative content for the construction community. Your feedback is the mortar that holds our podcast together. Share your thoughts, rate us, and let the construction community know why the Construction Life is your go-to podcast. Visit our website and check out the nearly 500 tradespeople and construction professionals listed on the site. Connect with all of them. Check us out at www.theconstructionlife.com for additional content, behind-the-scenes exclusives, and valuable resources. Dive deeper into the construction world with articles, guest profiles, and more. Follow us on Instagram at @TCL_theconstructionlife. Follow us on TikTok under the same handle and tweet us at @TCLconstruction. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, check out our link tree, and find exclusive discounts for listeners. Link is in the IG bio. Join the conversation on Facebook, the Construction Life community. And so I guess I always like starting off with 3 years as an apprentice.
Yes.
Before that?
I was actually out of high school. I went into engineering, civil engineering.
Really?
And unfortunately, that was when COVID started up. And
were you accepted into post?
Yeah, so I attended Fanshawe College.
Okay.
For I think 2 semesters, I think it was. And midway through, I was getting good marks, but I had to kind of tell myself, you know, learning through a screen, am I really going to be ready in the end?
Yeah.
And it was hard for me to really give myself like a confident answer on that. So I decided to leave, and I love building design. I love engineering, you know, working with my hands, being active, and carpentry was probably that best option for me.
Is it in the family? Anybody else?
Not really. I mean, trades are. I grew up on a cash crop farm just southeast of London.
Okay.
My dad's been a farmer for over 20 years. So growing up, I was always surrounded by that trade atmosphere.
How young are you, man?
I'm 21.
Oh, man, you're a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, wow. And 3 years already at the apprentice.
Yeah, I probably have 200 more work hours and then one more school term and I'll be done.
Going at 22, you'll be done, ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, I should write my CFQ in 9 months.
How did you find Covenant? Was it through Fanshawe?
A little bit through Fanshawe, and I just asked around the London area, and their name came up multiple times. So
lots of times, yeah. And it's a good place. It's almost becoming its own school.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
I'm curious about how that first day was, like when you got into that shop. What was it like for you?
Well, at first, you know, I had my doubts because I had no real documented construction experience. Everything I was mentioning to them was kind of stuff I did at home on the farm,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. So I was a little nervous, but my boss Craig and Randy, they were very understanding with it. They, you know, they kind of saw it in me that, you know, farm kid, he probably has what it takes. We'll give him a chance, and something I'm really thankful for.
What was the nervousness part about it? Like, what were you that you didn't have all the knowledge associated with it?
That, and I also, I guess not being around the trade atmosphere, I didn't know what I was about to, you know, walk into.
Yeah.
And really in high school, they still at that point weren't voicing enough about the trades, I feel like. You know, we had a slim idea of how it's really like, so.
I'm curious, what is the description of a tradesperson in the high school level these days?
Well, you know, it's, they say, you know, they always talk about, you know, you make a great living, you get a pension and all this, but they never bring in the importance of it, you know, what you can be a part of.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you could
be collaborative.
Yeah. You know, and they need to work more on showing the youth that you can be a part of these important builds. You know, you can be building that new hospital, you can be building that new bridge, instead of kind of just voicing the career, you know, the salary side of it, I feel like. So
how was it? I mean, I'm curious, if you're sitting there and you're speaking to a guidance counselor,
yeah,
and I guess options of careers are all over the place, right? Yeah. So you can pretty much at that age, whatever is interesting you, right? So
yes.
So you can start looking at things. But if you bring up the fact of, I want to be a tradesperson, I just don't know where do I want to go, how does that guidance counselor react to that question?
It's hard for them, because I mean, the high school I went to, we had maybe 500 kids, very, very small. So I don't think they had enough experience to really give you a clear answer on a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know, they did what they could, but you really kind of had to do your own.
Where were most of the kids going?
As far as my group, we were all country boys, so most of them were going towards the trades. But a lot of them, you know, medical, law, business,
okay,
engineering fields, yeah.
Okay, so it's kind of funny that they're all, a big chunk of them are going into the trades, but they're not really aware of how to get into the trades.
It's you know, they had co-op in high school and that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I felt like a lot of it was rushed on them. You know, they were kind of thrown in without seeing what their options are down the road. It's more like, okay, you'll finish your co-op and then maybe they'll hire you, maybe they won't. But, you know, I feel like they need to start bringing in a program where bring in real companies, bring in real people in the gym or something, and let kids kind of walk around, ask their own questions.
I thought that used to happen. It doesn't happen anymore?
Maybe at larger high schools, unfortunately ours, not enough kids. It's just not enough to get a good turnout probably for them.
Do you think the industry is actually interested in doing that? Do you think that these construction businesses want to take the time and effort and go and set up and then answer questions?
I think that'd be a great, great thing, because, you know, yes, they can apply for the co-op thing and be a sponsor for them or however that works, but it'd be much better if they, you know, came in and showed what they do day to day, and then they have a bigger audience. They could pull in more, you know, prospects that way.
I mean, I agree with you completely. I'm just trying to figure out, I think the good construction companies, whatever level or whatever skill trade it is, they're going to be interested in doing that. If you did it, like, how often would you do it? Maybe twice a year kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe at the start of the year, so you can get an idea of what is out there.
Absolutely.
And then they have the rest of the year to start interviewing different companies, including that company that presented it first.
Yeah.
And then maybe at the end of the year where it's like, listen, I'd actually like to come on and work with you.
Yep,
I can go through the summer and this is my last my year or whatever, and then go from there, and it would really be beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And when I went to Fanshawe, they do have their open house, and they do give you a good insight on what the programs will give you in that as far as trade wise.
Yeah.
But same deal. They don't have someone there who's, you know, day to day in the grind doing the work. And I feel like that's something they should do, because they can give a clear, you know, good answer on what they're going to be walking into.
I mean, did you feel when you're much younger, well, not much younger, you're 21, but I mean, like in your teen years, were you completely lost of where you potentially can go? Like, did you, like, what, the web and with social media, there wasn't places there to get answers?
I just think it's harder and harder every day for youth to figure out what they want to do. There's so much out there now, and there's so much, you know, with COVID, with the price of things, the way the world's going nowadays, I feel like a lot of people are kind of going that traditional route of thinking they need to get that medical degree, they need to get that engineering degree in order to make a living. But it's just that common stereotype that's still a bit around, I think, that people try to ignore, but they kind of just set that traditional route.
I think there's too many speaker boxes going on these days.
Absolutely.
That are just focusing on the fact that we need more tradespeople in the industry.
Absolutely.
I'm getting tired of that statement. We need more, because the thing is, that statement never never has an answer following it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Nobody's, like, everyone's barking,
yes,
but nobody's contributing.
Absolutely.
So it's like, get rid of that statement. Get rid of that question.
Yes.
How about we just make trades attractive. Yep. Make it at the same level of other industries out there, other career options, and get people that way.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, talking with a lot of my buddies and guys from school, with their initial step towards the trades as well, you know, with the amount of young guys not going into the trades, there's just as many employers, I feel, that are not taking the right first initial steps. And it kind of, from what I heard, it all related back to probation periods and, you know, that initial kind of evaluation.
Yeah.
So they get signed up. I think the average probation is 3 months, roughly. Yep. And
it's an investment.
Yeah. And, you know, these guys are not, they're not lazy guys. They're showing up on time. They're putting in the work. They show they have a passion for it.
Yeah.
But some of these employers, I feel, you know, everyone's working more. They're putting out more work. They're getting busy. But I feel like they're not paying enough attention. And when that 3 months comes around, you know, they can't give them a clear answer what they want to do. And some of these guys, they were telling me, they're waiting up upwards of 6 months to get signed up. And at that point, you know, you're going to lose that person's hope and that drive in them.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose potentially someone who's could have been a great addition.
See, that's the big question for me that I want answered, and nobody has an answer for it, is how many are leaving?
Yes.
I don't care about how many coming in.
Yes.
I want to know how many are leaving.
Absolutely.
And to the employer's point of view, that scenario that you just talked about, I think what's going on with those employers is they're not sure where their business is going to go.
Correct.
So they don't want to overstock, so to speak.
Correct.
For lack of a better term.
Yes.
They're not sure if I should take on this hire. They're not sure if I should train this individual.
Right.
Right.
It's tough. And you know, like every business, everyone's busy. Everyone's pushing out more work, but I feel like some of them are neglecting that, how much time it takes into someone. Everyone's different. Everyone takes their own time to get where they need to be.
Yeah.
And you know, they need to come up with a plan that will work for most people.
Knowing what you know now that you're 3 years into it.
Yes.
Would you have done anything slightly different?
Well, I probably would have gotten it earlier.
Sooner. Yeah. That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. I'm hearing, yeah, you would have got opportunities a lot sooner.
Absolutely. I think, you know, deep down, I always knew I was a tradesman. I guess I just wanted to try, you know, give it a shot. And, you know, I did do well in engineering. It's just, I had to look at the end of the day and I go like, is this something I really, really want to do every day?
What level of engineering were you looking at?
It was a civil engineering technologist that I would have been.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So, you know, that's mostly day-to-day office work. You get a few site visits, but mostly in a chair.
And yeah.
I don't know.
You want to be hands-on, right?
Yes, like absolutely.
Boots on the ground, hands-on, working, figuring out, problem-solving.
Yes. And, yeah. You know, you can get those jobs from that degree, but it's you know, it's a luck of a draw if you get that spot. So.
And how was the school? How was Fanshawe?
It's good. It's a great school.
Yeah.
Fanshawe has been great for it was great for the civil, and it's been amazing for the carpentry. Yeah.
Okay. So what was the program? So you started as a
civil,
and then you changed it over to the carpentry?
Yes. I left civil, took maybe a month off, and then I started asking around London area for carpentry ideas. And then within a month and a half of getting hired, I got signed up. So
did you see some other students from the civil side that were actually leaving and getting into the trade side?
A good portion of them left when I did.
Really?
Yes. And that was mostly based off the COVID, the online learning.
Okay, because the online learning, they just didn't see that was going to stick, right?
It got a lot of guys, yes.
Yeah, okay, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So what is your day-to-day duties now at Covenant? Like you being a three-year apprentice at the tail end of it, what do you date? Like Monday to Friday, you go in, what do you handle?
Yeah, so recently I've been working with my boss, Randy. They've been kind of pushing me towards more independence, getting more on that ordering material side, planning side, kind of scheduling side of things, trying to introduce me more to that.
Yeah.
So I've been doing some larger jobs with him. He'll show up in the morning, kind of give me a rundown, do his site visits. He'll come back and we'll bang out for the day. Last job, the job I'm currently on, we're waiting on, it's a big addition. So I'm pretty much doing most things, everything from framework to up to finishing. Chris and the team does our cabinet installs now, but
yep.
Trim, doors, window installs, exterior finish, interior finish, yeah.
And Dan's been guiding you on the tiling stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I've been with Dan for the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, he's a good tile setter,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
He gets it, he understands it, and he's got the gold star attached to it because he's done the testing and everything like that, so it's all good for him, right?
Oh, absolutely. I always get excited because I don't get to do a lot of tile work with him because it's a bathroom.
Yeah.
It's hard to get two guys in there.
Yeah.
But when I do it, yeah, it's exciting because, yeah, he's.
Yeah, I remember those days, man. Yeah. You'd be working and sometimes you get two or three guys in there and it's just like, this is just ridiculous, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Dan's a great teacher.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing.
Welcome to the future of interactive technology, brought to you by Brand Media, a leader in the digital world for 20 years. Imagine a world where information is at your fingertips, where directions, details, and discoveries are just a touch away. That's the world Brand Media creates every day with our state-of-the-art indoor and outdoor kiosks, cutting-edge AI, robots, and intuitive software solutions. Navigating large spaces has never been easier. Our wayfinding kiosks are more than just maps. They're interactive guides, helping you explore malls, commercial buildings, and sales centers with the ease and efficiency. But we don't just stop there. Brand Media specializes in creating engaging, interactive experiences for all your needs. From digital signage that captures attention to lead capture systems that drive your business forward, our solutions are designed to inform, engage, and connect. In the real estate world, our interactive software shines, showcasing properties in sales centers with elegance and detail. Imagine immersing your clients in their future home or office space before it's even built. And for businesses, we offer key communication tools. Our digital signage and interactive content keep your audience informed and engaged, whether in a bustling mall or in a corporate building. 20 years of innovation, 20 years of excellence, Brand Media, where technology meets creativity. Discover more at brandmedia.com. I saw that, I think on your Instagram, you had a thumbnail where it was the first home.
Yes.
Is that your home? Is that a first home project that you were working on through Covenant?
That is my home, yeah.
That's your home, yes, right? Love it. So yellow brick, man.
Yeah, yeah. Old house.
How old is that house?
We don't know a rough date, but we're thinking 1915.
Yeah, it was kind of feeling that, right?
Yeah.
And the one first thing that I loved was the yellow brick, obviously, but then you had to fix a lot of the yellow brick too.
Oh, yes. I got to pretty much remortar most of the house.
A lot of it, huh?
Yeah.
And you did it yourself?
Yes, I'm slowly working at it, yeah.
Wow.
I'm doing mostly everything I can. The roof I got done.
I saw that, and I was really envious that you took this older house and you decided to use a modern day material for the roof, and it works.
Yes.
100% it works. So you're using your metal roof, right?
Yes.
But was it an ACM panel or how was it?
It's just your average barn pattern steel roof.
Yeah. They
did give me the option to do the seamless.
Yeah.
But when I saw the price change in that, I was like,
But it still looks good this way. It looks really good. And it works. It works in flavor because you're not doing what Toronto people are doing, like butchering it all completely and tearing it apart and then keeping 1% of the heritage of it and making it a Toronto house, right?
Yeah.
You're still making it true to its original core of what that house was all about.
Absolutely.
That's what I like about it, right?
That's my goal for it. I really want to keep that heritage sides, but just make it a modern touch, you know, not change too much, bring in some brighter colors, but keep it close to how it would look.
It's nice to do all the discovery thing. I know that there was some papers that you found, newspapers from a certain era.
Yes.
Did you find, structurally speaking, anything that was, other than there's the classic where the center of the house might be dipping a tiny bit?
Luckily, mine is...
Was it still stable?
Mine has a very strong bearing wall downstairs, so it's been pretty good, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. It's mostly the exterior brickwork, just from the old roof wasn't doing much justice and lack of eaves troughs, you know, eating the foundation away.
Yeah.
Just little things like that.
But it also looked like you didn't have, your neighbor's not that close to you.
Right. So I only have a neighbor on my right side. I got a little forest area on my left.
So basically Mother Nature just beats on that brick, right?
Yes.
That's probably why the brick took, you know, needs to work now, right?
Absolutely.
But doing the work now, and I always encourage that it's smart that you're doing it in stages because, to be very honest, if you were to bring a brick crew in there and handle it, I mean, they'll do it properly.
Yes.
But it's a big ticket item.
It is.
It's very, very expensive, right?
Yes.
And so it's like you can do one section, one wall. But I mean, I like that you're adding windows and you're changing things and you're reproducing the arch that was there or could have been there.
Yep.
And it still fits it. It still fits the original design of it.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm taking my time financially wise, but also just I want to do a good job. But I'm also trying to approach things that will make it a more efficient home. Because right now, heating it, you know, all that, it's tough.
Of course.
But, yes.
It's a beautiful home, man. It's going to be a stunning house,
yes,
right?
Thank you.
On the front portico, do you know what that original detail, the wood detail, I mean, what's that made out of? What species of wood do you know of?
I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But
I was just curious because it was a nice little detail. It was a nice little touch.
Yes.
And it adds to the metal roof, right?
Yep.
Which you never think that it would, but it does.
It does.
And
yes.
It works, right? But I'm assuming that it just needs a little bit of tender loving care regarding stripping some paint and then getting down to the bare and then possibly painting it again.
Yes.
Or just sealing it properly,
yes.
Right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately enough, my grandpa does woodworking, so I've been sending some of the pieces to him to remake. So
nice.
He's been helping me out.
What did they put on the ceiling on the soffit part of that? Portico there?
Well, nothing. They just put down like under the roofing, you mean?
Yeah.
It's
on the porch side, on the other side. Normally they would use, wouldn't they use pine, TNG?
Oh, yes, the tongue and groove. Yes.
Okay, all right.
It's just pine, tongue, and groove under there.
Got it, okay.
It needs to be replaced, but yep, that's what's under there, yeah.
So was it easy for you to, okay, here's the house, here are the problems, one at a time?
At first, I didn't see a lot of the issues. I kind of had a quick glance.
Yeah.
But, it was nothing I felt I couldn't handle. As far as the roofing, I didn't really want to get on some of those slopes. They're a bit crazy for me.
Hired the crew, man.
Yeah.
They've got the ladders and they've got the ankles for it.
So that was the one thing. But other than that, I looked at it and said, you know what? It'll take time, but I can do this. And it'll turn out great.
What's the electrical like? It updated?
Yes, it is, fortunately.
100 or 200? No, you only need 100 in there, right?
Yeah,
yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Plumbing-wise, was it also updated?
Yes, me and my dad did a few lines, but other than that, yes, all updated.
That's going to be nice.
Yeah.
And then I guess there are plans of building decks or anything like that, start spreading it out on the backyard side of things or anything like that?
Down the road, right now, running only 2 bedrooms. So if I am there when family hits and all that, then yes, I will have to do an addition of some sort.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping next year I can get my kitchen on a go. Hoping to vault the ceilings. It's got an exposed brick in the kitchen. So
nice.
It'll turn out really nice. Yes.
So, I mean, you're building your network of contractors and tradespeople out there.
Absolutely.
They can help you either with ideas or with work as well, too, right?
Yes.
That's and then are you keeping the kitchen true to itself? Or are you knocking out a wall or changing anything like that?
I'm going to keep it how it is. I did get donated some cabinets from a buddy of mine. So I'm going to see how I can do with those for the layout.
Okay.
But I'm going to try and keep that older look. I'm going to add an island in there, keep the colors kind of old looking. But yeah, I'm excited for the brick wall.
I'm curious, what's old looking colors to you?
Like old farmhouse colors. So like,
see, I see that house probably having either like an olive green or something.
Exactly.
Like, right. That's how I see it. Right. Yes. With the exposed brick.
Yes. That's exactly the plan.
That's kind of nice. Eh?
Yeah.
That would look really nice. I'm just, I don't, what's the slab? What's the countertop?
I'm going to do quartz, but as far as color wise, it'll probably be a whiter, brighter tone.
It makes sense. But that'll work. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And then maybe the island could be a wood.
Yeah.
Could be a wood top, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. For prepping and all kinds of stuff. It's always nice and warm and inviting to sit at that, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I like that. See?
Yeah.
The cabinets that were donated, they're shaker?
Yes. Yeah.
So you're just going to paint them olive or something like that?
Just going to paint them.
Which is a lot better than Chantilly lace these days. You can't, like, I mean, it's just like, that's a gem. Were you, like, grateful that you found that?
Well, the thing was, it was my uncle's home.
Okay.
And
all right.
He worked a lot. And he, in a way, he really let that place run down. And he knew he would have to fork out hundreds to be able to sell it.
To bring it up, yeah.
So, I don't like telling people that because some of their thoughts immediately are, you got given a house or something like that.
That ain't always the case.
No, I still had to pay a very...
Of course.
Shocking sum for a 20-year-old.
And you still have to do a lot of work.
Absolutely.
Right? So, and it's like, I get it. We have skills and we can do the work.
Yes.
But it's still, we have to do the work.
Yeah.
Right. And we can hire certain people to do the work, but we want to do it ourselves, not just necessarily to save money, but we want to do it ourselves because we want to say that we had the hand in it. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's valuable. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. It's still a great project to work on.
Yeah.
Especially at your age, man.
Yeah. It was at the time too, when house prices were just starting to spike. I got in just before the interest rates were going crazy. So I kind of told myself this might be my only chance of owning a home in the next 10 years. So
yeah,
I had to jump on it. Yeah.
Well, take your time, work on it.
Yeah.
How do you look at the skills that you need to do the tasks that are possibly coming down the pipeline? Because obviously you get on a project, you get on a job site.
Yep.
It might, for the most part, for the first few years of you working in construction, yeah. it's the first time that you're tackling things, right?
Correct.
How do you approach that?
Well, I was just talking to Dan about this the other day, and I was telling him that if there's something that I know that's coming or that I'm going to have to do, I do a lot of at-home research study-wise.
Yeah.
I like to be prepared the day it comes. So really, at home, I spend a lot of my time, you know, researching, watching videos, finding tips and tricks on how to do things. That way, when the time comes, I usually have a foreman there to help me out as well. But that way, I'm a little bit more ahead, and I can have a little bit more ease.
Do you think, Brandon, like there's a lot of noise out there in the construction landscape when it comes to people trying to teach sometimes the wrong lessons?
Yes, yes. I mean, fortunately enough, at Covenant, they're all great guys.
Yeah.
So I really lucked out there. But from what I hear, yes, there are some guys still teaching, I wouldn't say the correct way.
I would say the motivated way, depending on where the sponsor is attached to the lesson.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's, yes. I, you know, you hear about some guys who, especially in school, you know, it's been 2 years and they still haven't even, some of them hardly touch a saw. Some of them. Like, they cut, but...
I know, but we have off hours and we've got weekends.
I know.
And we got other people that start, like, in my day when I was your age, as soon as anybody got wind that I knew how to do a thing or two with my hands,
yes,
and I had a small arsenal of tools,
yeah,
the wheel started spinning. Can you come by? Can you do this? Can I borrow your truck? Can I, like, all this stuff started happening, right?
Right. And, you know, you gotta help yourself as well. You gotta put in your own time and do better. But, you know, at work, you know, I believe after that first year, it should all be coming at you. You know, they should be throwing as much, not too much to overwhelm you, but they should be throwing a lot at you to get just as more the better.
I got to think, I got to go through the Rolodex of shows. And Dan, I'm talking to you right now. I'm pretty sure, did you convince him to go yellow or what's your DeWalt?
I'm Milwaukee.
You're Milwaukee. So yes. Dan didn't convince you to go because Dan's... No. Yellow, right?
Yes, and a few Festool, but... Yes.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yes. But he's not red.
No.
So how did you get hooked onto Milwaukee?
Well, number one, my dad at the farm.
There we go.
All Milwaukee tools.
There we go.
But part of it was, actually, I want to be unique in a way of not worrying about losing batteries and stuff. Like, when I started, everyone was DeWalt, so I was like, you know what?
You can't lose a Milwaukee battery. You need a wheelbarrow to carry them around.
exactly. But, yeah, and my personal opinion... A lot better tool.
Than DeWalt?
Yeah. I mean, I will say, though, I do use the DeWalt 60-volt skill saw. Nothing has come close to that thing.
Really, yeah?
I feel like, yeah. It's a machine. I use the 9-amp on it, and it's, oh, yeah. It's a good saw.
I don't doubt it. I mean, all of them have some good tools. They're all there. Everyone's just choosing their colors, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was just, it was funny. I was calling Tim from RVC Homes and just giving him my experience of what I was going through a building department fiasco of mine. And in the background, I started hearing something and I was like, is that my favorite tool? Which is the DeWalt multi-oscillating tool, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it was just screaming loud. He had to yell louder to just speak to me. And I was like, how far away are you from it? He's don't worry about it. No, so it's kind of interesting. Why did your dad get into Milwaukee being a farmer? I'm wondering.
So they have their big impacts. So when he's out in the field, you know, taking some nuts off, stuff like that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You know, as far as what he's used, nothing has come close to the power that they are putting out. Also, I picked him up last Christmas, one of their rocket lights. And he can put a battery in one of those, and when he's out in the field and something breaks down, he can put that light telescopic, you know.
Exactly, right?
They just it works for him. And he's also a fireman in our hometown there. And most fire halls now are using Milwaukee tools.
Milwaukee, right?
Yes, so.
Is it a red thing?
Maybe, but I don't know. But yeah, so then, you know, he started out with their chainsaw there, their handheld sawzalls they got at the fire hall as well.
Kind of makes sense. Yeah. I mean, because you can break through things certain, like a lot. I mean, the sawzall is a go-to. Everyone calls it a sawzall, even though it's a different brands or whatever, but it's still called a sawzall in everybody's eyes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm just curious about that. So it's kind of funny that you work with Dan and Dan's a yellow and then you're red. And so it's like, okay, well, fine.
Yeah.
It works. The tools work, right?
Yes,
that's just bottom line. Yeah. What's something that you haven't built yet that you're looking forward to possibly getting the opportunity to?
Well, you know, really, when we started, I only got maybe a year with cabinet install kind of being immersed in it. And, you know, since the merger, I they've been kind of pulling me away. I haven't had the time to really get with an installer. So, you know, getting more into learning cabinet installs, stuff like that, would be something I'd really like, because, you know, it's another thing to add to the list of, hey, I can do that. So
what's the trick to cabinet installing? I guess it's just a matter of figuring out, setting up some jigs or thing that can hold it.
Yeah.
Most cabinet installers I know, they're like lone wolves, right?
Oh, yeah.
They like working by themselves.
Yeah.
And that's, if they like it or they can't find an assistant.
Correct. And you know what? At Covenant, it's just a time issue. You know, it's hard to organize enough time to try and fit people in everywhere.
Yeah.
And I understand that. But just the little tips and tricks would be nice to know. And that way, if day comes, if I need to do it, I know it.
Any business, especially in construction, requires us to know what's going on at all times. But how can we avoid being dragged down by the bits and bytes in order to have that time to build the business and take it forward? If we don't have the right tool to operate our business and are doing things manually instead of digitally, we end up being held back. Now, I'm not talking about making sheets on Excel or texting instead of calling. I'm talking about whole new levels of doing things digitally. From knowing that our employees clocked in at the right place and time, ensuring our employees know the job they need to do, tracking what's going on in the field by receiving live forms or checklists, these all can and should be done digitally. Not to mention your younger employees who work and live digitally expect to get that in their workplace as well. And if this sounds like fiction, it's not. Just switch to Connect Team, a platform built for managers and its many different capabilities to help you truly manage your business and give you back time to focus on what you need, while giving your employees the work experience they expect to get in 2024. Connect Team has a free plan and a 14-day free trial. Try them today by checking out the link in the show notes. Like, kind of tell the builder to put all plywood on the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Little things like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of having to rely on 16 on center.
Yep.
Or if the studs are on 16 on center.
Yep.
I think that should be in the code. Ah. Call me crazy. I think the code should be plywood on kitchen cabinet areas.
Yep.
All Absolutely. The walls. You're going to cover the backsplash. The cabinets all have to get mounted to something.
Yep.
Skin it with 3-quarter ply.
Yep.
Not OSB, 3-quarter ply.
Yep.
And then you'd be a lot better off, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So cabinets, anything on the outside or anything like that? Hardscape or landscape?
Some hardscape would be nice. You know, some of those crazy driveways and you know, back pool houses and stuff. Yeah, that'd be cool to get into. Yeah.
Yeah.
But really, you know, at Covenant, we get such a variety of work. I'm never bored. You know, we some days I could be doing trim. The next day I could be framing. So
you're never bored, but do you ever get tired?
Honestly, no.
No, really? Yeah.
No.
It's a long day, and like it's just like we got to get this finished because we got to come back in tomorrow to start fresh on something else.
You know, I kind of like that. I like, you know, doing the most you can, work until you, yeah. you know, you can't stand. Yeah. I like that.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
Take advantage of them, man.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're probably about 20 years away from going, yeah, I'm a little tired today, yeah. man. It's yeah. simple as that. That's why the younger generation comes in and all of a sudden you're like, listen, you carry that for me, please.
Yeah.
I'll take care of part of it, right? Yeah. I'll take the pieces. You take the bulk.
Yeah.
That's just construction, man, yeah. in general, right? Are you kind of coming in and being Columbo? And when I say that, you're being like an inspector and discovering what craziness homeowners have done over the years on certain projects that you walk in and you're like, how did you even come to this conclusion to do this? Because it's incorrect.
Absolutely. In most cases, I see parts of hearing people, you know, they just recently bought this house, and yet I go in the basement and I see some stuff that's like, did you get an inspection? Did you get anyone to look at this? Because, like, we're going to open up, you know, a can of worms here. So I see more of that. Yeah.
What kind of, like, are you talking like major structural issues?
Well, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Big beam issues in old houses, you know, brick foundation work that's like clear, visible. I don't know how. You know, no one has seen this yet, but that kind of stuff, yeah.
But is it the fault of the homeowner or they hired the cheap contractor? Or is it both?
It's probably both.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like a lot of people, you know, they're so excited about their home. I don't know if the inspection, if they got one or not. I don't really know, but...
They care about the rooms that they care about.
Yes.
So master, bath,
exactly.
and kitchen.
Exactly.
Yard kind it's of thing. Like, and that's it. The rest of it, we don't really care about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But like you're going into the basement, you're seeing beam issues and people are so used to just chopping out dimensional lumber or even structural lumber.
Yeah.
I guess back in the older homes, you wouldn't have much steel or any kind of major it'd all be lumber.
All
sistered
lumber.
Together, four ply or whatever.
Yep.
But true lumber.
Yep.
And then they're chopping it out.
Yes, absolutely. It's, you know, and we actually, the current job that I'm getting back to, but they got their basement spray foamed. It's an old home, probably 1900s. But they
1900s, so it's a stone rubble foundation?
It's a brick foundation, yes.
Oh.
They spray foamed up in the joist cavities, and without proper waterproofing on the outside of the house, the water in behind the brick has gotten in and sat in the foam.
Yeah.
And it has rotted out the sill plates and the joists and everything.
That's exactly what it's doing.
And unfortunately, like, it's a lot of work now. And we're on that one now, but it's something that they were not even aware of, you know.
So are you having to, because I'm assuming that this is what we're going to have to do, is you're having to break apart all that spray foam and then repair every single joist that's...
It has actually gotten even farther of, we have the, it has a newer upper addition on it as well. So we actually have that sitting on some big I-beams right now, and it's floating while we redo the whole bottom half. Yeah.
And this wasn't even part of the original scope?
Not at all.
This is a discovery.
Yes.
Then having to explain it to the homeowner.
Yes, unfortunately.
This is their house that they just recently purchased?
I think within the last 4 years.
So this was done way before the four-year period?
Yes. So this newer addition on top was maybe 5-6 years old. It's got all engineered truss work on it and everything. Mm. But what they built on is just, it's actually it's crazy. It's held up.
It's sad to see that, because it's like you can't think that one particular material on a construction site is ever bulletproof.
No.
The application of that material can cause so much more damage down the road.
Absolutely.
Just like this scenario.
Yeah. And you would think if you're building up top, the first place you would check would be the basement, you know, to make sure.
That's what I've always done.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Whenever I had meetings with clients and they want to talk about an addition or an extension or what have you, let's go to the basement.
Yep.
Why do we want to go to the basement? I got to see what's going to stand on this, right?
Yep.
I got to see what's the issue, what's been done.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no way that wasn't there when they built that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's a new task for us. It's a new kind of, I don't think they've experienced something like this before, but so far we're tackling it. So
how much extra do you think it's taking you time-wise that you're going to have to just get to the point where you start working the original scope?
I think it's already been a month and a half longer. Yeah. So.
Wow. How are the homeowners taking it?
I haven't heard, because it's been more of sub-trade issue right now, so I've been pulled off.
Okay.
But I haven't heard much, but I'm sure they're going to go proceed with everything, but...
They have to.
Yeah.
They own a property.
Yeah.
You don't do this, exactly. Whatever you do on top...
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we don't have a choice.
It's going to fall apart. It'll crack, it'll shift, it'll do whatever it's going to do.
Yes.
So you have to do this, right?
Yes, they have.
I've explained that. Those are hard conversations to have with clients where it's like, it's got nothing to do with pretty stuff.
No.
It's got nothing to do with the finishing.
No.
But if you don't do this and spend this amount of money that you could either buy a car or do this,
yeah,
you're going to have some major issues later on.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Exactly. And, you know, I think they knew, owning an older home, they knew there were going to be a few more expenses, but maybe not this much, but it'll work out. I know it will.
Eventually. It's just a matter of time, right? And you're going through it right now. So luckily you've got a semi-mild winter that you're going through this with, right?
Yes. I think the next step is getting the concrete guys in. I don't know if they're going to pour like a frost wall around it or what they're going to plan on doing, but yeah, I think that's the next step.
I'd love to kind of double back a tiny bit, because it's not all that often I get to the young guys in the show here, right? Because I know that you guys are listening.
Yep.
How much does the construction environment, and when I say the environment, the actual job site, but working in different harsh climates, because we're in Canada here, right? How much does that factor into you guys, your younger tradespeople, deciding whether or not I want to do this?
Well, you know, in my spot, I'm a farm kid. I mean, I've been out.
You've been outside.
I've been outside.
Yeah.
You know, I've experienced, I've worked, you know, labor jobs through high school and that, been outside. So for me, wasn't a big change. But, you know, for guys who've been in school, you know, working, you know, if they're in the city, they're usually their first job's retail or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? So, for some, I've seen some on sites where it's like they're underprepared dress wise. They're not thinking ahead, for sure. But you know, after a year or so, they get to know. They know how to be prepared.
And then I guess the follow up to that is, how much does the stigma get attached to that? Where it's like, if I get into trades, my hands will be dirty. I will come home with dirty clothes.
Yeah.
I will, I don't know, maybe get frowned upon because I'm a dirty individual, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I deal with it at home. I mean, my girlfriend gives me heck all the time. I've about ruined every single pair of pants I have and, you know.
You didn't ruin them. You used them.
Exactly. Exactly. Like today, I had a hard time finding clean clothes today, to be honest with you. But
yeah, you create one stack and you have another stack and you try to not let the good stack overlap on the bad stack.
Yes.
And you keep on going at that point, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I've always looked at it when I was doing it. It was just like, it was badges of honor. I mean, like.
Yes.
It's a pain in the ass when you're using modified thin set and it's like, it's just glue. Or if you ever get Portuguese luck stuck on your trousers or whatever, PL.
Yes.
It's like, good luck on that because it's sticky as hell on your fingers and it's never getting out of your clothes. Long sleeve, short sleeve. Worst case, if you get it on the hoodie or your jacket and then you're trying to stick it all together and somehow it's pinched together.
Yeah.
Like we get all that stuff. We understand all that stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
But that's part of it. And I'm just trying to figure out how much is the younger generation realizing that that's part of it, but it's not a negative part of it.
No.
I'm trying to say.
It's not. You just, you know, at end of the day, you got to buy the right gear that's going to protect you and like, hold up to that kind of stuff, especially boots, you know. But, you know, if you do your research, you kind of get an idea, you should be all right.
And the smart trades, you always have a backup in the car, in the truck, in whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you get caught, whatever, rain, flash, something like that, or it does drop dramatically. All of a sudden, you want to put another layer on. Construction is about layers. Layers is the best way. Listen, I trust first year, I was like, huge Carhartt coat, look like, you know, the Marshmallow Man in Ghostbusters kind of a mentality.
Yeah.
You can't move, but you're toasty.
Yeah.
But you can't move. But the moment you start working, you're getting too hot now. Yeah. It's all about layers.
It is.
Just find different clothes that, you know, and we get into extreme. Normally in Canada, you get into February's, the long johns come out.
Oh, yes.
You're getting the layers there, right? Yeah. And it's a pain in the ass to go to the outhouse or whatever, the porta potty, and you got to dig to find it, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, but it's part of it.
It is.
And but it'll keep you warm.
It'll
keep you comfortable, and then thick socks are great. And then just make sure you buy a pair of boots that will make it to those weather, right? Those extreme weather days, right?
And absolutely. And, you know, most companies have the boot allowance, so they're going to help you out.
Yeah. But,
you know, personally, what I got to work on is getting a pair of steel toe rubbers because I've been in situations where I get them just soaked and I ruin a good pair. So I got to work on that, but.
You got to do a little bit of concrete work.
Yeah.
Once you do a little bit of concrete work, you'll just be like mandatory. You'll get them, right?
Yeah.
Those are actually a good pair, but if you are going to get rubbers, you might as well just get steel toe ones. Don't even bother with anything else. Right?
Yeah. They insulate steel toe.
Yeah. That's all it is. Right. Yeah. Because at some point you're going to be in a Canadian winter working on a project and you're going to be like, man, I'm glad that my toes are warm.
Yeah.
Right. And protected. Right.
Yeah.
Safe as that. But yeah, that's what I think. I'd like that you're aware of it. The younger trades are aware of it. They understand it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I still say that, listen, don't be ashamed of wearing that workwear. Yeah. It's a uniform.
Right.
And if you're getting really good stuff, doesn't matter what brand it is out there.
Right.
Sometimes it costs more than a suit.
It does.
Right. Or your casual clothing of a person that working in a cubicle. Right. And it's being protective and it's being functional for you. And
it is.
It's just how it is. Right.
Right. And, you know, if you spend, you know, good money on a reputable brand, you know, you're not going to have to buy it again for the next 3 years or so. So.
Are you guys mostly, you younger trades, are you guys mostly like tool belts or are you guys holster pockets or?
Me personally, because I'm so thin in that, I have the tool belt with the suspenders. Yeah.
Oh, the suspenders is a good idea, man. Yeah. Because it'll start to save on your back.
Yes. I got like a 29 waist on me too. So my first term I got back, I spent my incentive on a Diamondback belt. So they got the small belt. So
nice.
I kind of had to because, it was dropping all over the place. So. Yeah.
They make the suspenders too, right?
They do. They do.
Yep. Okay, it makes sense. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I never understood why, and that was why I never liked tool belts in the early days, is because it was always that weight dropped on the lower back.
It is.
And you felt it at the end of the day.
Yes.
Right? So it's just like the moment you start realizing, hang on, I got to move this weight to my shoulders, right? So then it could just naturally carry that weight, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 They've been great so far. Yeah. I mean, from what I see, mostly not a lot of guys wear the suspenders anymore or... I mean, framers do, but as far as Covenant goes, I'm one of the only ones, yeah.
I'm surprised guys haven't, and I haven't seen this yet. It's just like, start putting your company name on the suspenders, get it embroidered or something like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that would look solid, right?
Yeah.
Plus, you're taking a lunch break, you want to go walk or go take care of something, you see that?
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a nice uniform.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of a nice idea. And then also add to social media.
Yeah. It'd be great.
Speaking of which, how much of the gram is important to you guys these days?
You know, I think it's going to be the new way of voicing your work. I really do. It's, you know, you're able to bring in such a wide variety of audience. And for me personally, LinkedIn has been great.
Yep.
Posting on there, you know, I get a lot of messages all the time of people all over the place saying, wow, you know, good job. How's school's going? People I've never met. And for me, that's crazy. You know,
on LinkedIn, you're saying that.
LinkedIn, yeah.
I agree with you. Like, LinkedIn is a very valuable platform because I think it doesn't have the BS that's associated with always making everything look like sunshine and rainbows.
Yes.
On Instagram or TikTok.
Yeah. I think the problem with Instagram, there's more toxic kind of stuff.
Yes,
where,
the noise.
Yes. If you post, you're guaranteed going to have a comment that's, you know, going to be negative, going to be something that people are
delete, block.
Yes.
Delete, block.
Right. And it's going to ruin your confidence a little bit.
Yes.
So.
It'll eat away at you.
Yeah.
So that's why it's really easy. Delete, block, and move on.
It is, yeah.
Right? So, someone wants to attack, let them attack. Let them have fun with that. But they ain't going to get a reply or response, right?
Correct. So
it's the best way to handle it.
Yeah. And so really, I think as on the professional side of things, LinkedIn is the way to go. If you want to promote your work to, you know, people who are really there to, you know, care and compliment and like real interest, then yeah, that's the place to go.
Contractors, it's time to empower your business with Shelta Tech implementation. Shelta is offering a free meeting to tackle your biggest pain points head on. Their goal, to develop a custom company app that's built just for you, solving your pain points, streamlining your processes, making your workday smoother. Here's the scoop. There's a $15,000 digital adoption grant available, and Shelta is an expert at helping you secure it. This isn't just funding, it's your stepping stone into a new era of digital efficiency. By your second meeting, you'll get a tailor-made company playbook, a software prototype designed with your input, project tracking, real-time budget management, and daily logs, all integrated into a single app. It's tech that works for you, not the other way around. Shelta isn't just offering tech, they're offering transformation. Join the community of 93 subcontractors who have already stepped up their game with Shelta Tech. Two meetings, countless opportunities, ready to make a move? Visit shelta.app. Let's pave the way to smarter, tech-driven future. Shelta Technology, custom tech solutions for the modern contractor. Here's a question for you, Brent. You're 21, just getting started.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you're 71 and you're looking to get out. Has that been a thought?
Well, you know, I think I can confidently say I don't want to be on the tools forever. I do want to get
you
to that.
You shouldn't be?
No. And you
what's
know,
forever to you, though? 50s?
Mid-40s, 50s.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. No, that's the vibe that I'm getting. That from not just from you, from a lot of the younger generation.
Yep.
They want to be operating the business.
Exactly.
They want to be operating a legacy business that could be handed off down somebody else.
Right. And, you know, I don't see myself leaving Covenant anytime soon.
Good.
It's a place where I believe even 10 years.
You're growing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I know I need to try at some point. And, you know, if that's starting my own thing, if that's, I've always had an interest in getting to that site super position on a bigger set of jobs. That's been a goal of mine. And I know I have to try. So when the time comes, I'm trying my best, but yeah.
But then, okay. So come to those later years, you'll already be like, I achieved what I wanted to achieve. I pulled it all off. I'm happy.
Correct.
I mean, I talked to a lot of the older trades and it's just like, you get that kind of idea where they start thinking, what else am I going to do?
Right.
Right. And, and to me, it's a double-edged sword where it's like, I think that they still have another 15, 20 years of living. So financially, they probably have to continue working.
Right.
And I think that's the one good thing that you guys are doing as a younger generation. You're seeing an exit.
Right.
You're seeing an exit plan.
Right.
Right. So you're looking at it like, I'm in my 20s. I'm strong. I'm young. I'm going to learn a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But I want to build a business. I want to build a portfolio, a strong one. And then I want to attract other people that might be interested in taking it over.
Correct.
And then I move on to do something else. Or I'm in the shadows and managing the business that way, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a good thing about Fanshawe, too, is they give you a 7-year period if you want to go back and start where you left off. So I have roughly 5 years left if I want to go back and just finish that civil degree to get it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, okay. You know, it's not that I'll leave carpentry, but if it's something I need to take time off and just, you know, get it under my wing, then it's something I might do.
Wouldn't hurt to have it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So that's nice that they do that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's changed. I read that when I left, so that was a while ago. But yeah, I believe it said 7 year return to where you left off. So
they probably see the value in that. That's why, because you're getting a lot of people changing their mind at some point.
Exactly.
And that's why they just want to continue directing them.
Right. And you know, some people have to leave school out of their control, right?
So, yeah.
You know, it's not a life. Fair way. Yeah.
Things exactly. happen, right?
Exactly. So,
Is it your girlfriend? Or, yeah, it's your girlfriend.
Yeah, girlfriend. Yeah.
Is she asking you to build things these days or what?
No, not really.
They're, not
her,
yet?
Her parents are a little bit. They want me to do an office for them, but...
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like an office in the house? Their
yes.
house?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought like a separate, like a bunkie or something like that in the backyard or something.
Yeah, no, just in the basement there. But really, my family doesn't claw at me too much for work.
They
no.
will.
They will. They will. They just, I don't know. Yeah, most of my side work comes through just buddies of mine. So, yeah.
What kind of office are they asking you to build?
Just something simple for her dad.
Okay. Yeah.
It just needs to
read. Any woodworking, any trim or any details, any ceiling treatment or anything?
It'll probably just be, you know, mud touch-ups, but new LVP flooring, trim work, maybe some cabinets put in, but we'll have to wait and see. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that you guys are in London. Even in London, you guys are using the classic step bevel. In the trim work, right?
Yeah.
At least it was poplar.
Yeah.
It wasn't MDF.
No.
So that was a good thing. That was a saving grace. I was like, yeah, it's poplar.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of glue are you running? What kind of glue do you like? Wait, you're probably different than Dan's, or I'm trying to figure out what kind of wood glue you're using.
Mine's just the LePage 10 minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're just using that. And then for finer work, if it needs to be set, you know, perfect, then I'll use the miter bond.
The miter bond, eh? You like the miter bond?
Not on big pieces. No, trying to line up top and bottom on a big piece with miter bond. Good
glue,
luck.
Glue, clamp it,
yes.
Or screw it together, nail it, whatever.
Yeah.
Let it set.
Yeah.
Ain't going anywhere.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Simple as that, right? You can come back years later and it's not split.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You have any interest in getting into the painting side of things?
You know, a little bit. I actually did recently a little painting side gig. It was all right, but I don't have the cut-in skills yet, so it's
tape.
It was a little slow, yeah.
Everybody these days is cheating. They're all using tape, which is great. Back in my day, it was like the early days. We were always cutting, finding the right brush, making sure that you left that line in the plaster, right? So you had that little path that you could follow the brush with.
Yep.
Everybody these days is just tape, and it's a lot of masking. It's almost like you're getting guys from auto detailing.
Yeah.
And that they're the ones that are becoming the painters of residential spaces, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which kind of makes sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And no, I've seen the old drywall blade trick, too. Get the old 14-inch or whatever and hold it up in the corner and paint along that. I haven't tried that, but I could always do that as well. But, yeah.
There's like, that's the one trade that a lot of clients think that they can just do it themselves, DIY it. And it's always a big argument with them, right?
Because
they don't understand how critical that is. It's the last step.
Right.
And all this work has been put, and now we want to put the cherry.
Right.
And you want to just destroy this cherry.
Right. And I ran into that in my own house. You know, I was like, oh, painting, you know, I'll get that done. And it's all plaster still, and the corners are not square or smooth.
Of course not.
And I'm cutting this in, and I'm like, oh, my God. I take a step back, and I'm like,
I need to go to the optometrist. Like, what's going on here? My eyes are off or something?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
It was not too good. So, I underestimated it for sure. Painting is no joke.
Lesson learned. You just go back and figure it out.
Oh,
simple as that, right?
Yeah.
You're going to keep a lot of the plaster?
Well, no.
You got to open up certain things to get to.
I do. Most of the rooms are going to get all redone. The house is probably 30% done drywall wise. But there's this huge tall section where the stairs are, and I just redid the staircase, and I really don't want to drop plaster and everything on top of it. I know I should have done it beforehand, but as far financially, it wasn't going to work out.
It kind of makes sense to do it before, but you just got to protect it. That's the crappy thing, right?
Yes.
So then you guys will be walking on protection there, which is a pain in the ass sometimes.
Yeah. So if I do it, I'm going to wrap the staircases up, but it's that section will be the last to do. And if I ever do it, but most rooms, yes, I will, fully insulate. Yeah.
I was on a job recently because I was stopping by to say hello to Sam the plumber, and he invited me to one of his job sites, and he was giving me the tour, and we were just walking around, and it was all engineered staircase, so it was a single 6-inch piece of steel,
right?
Cradling what looked like to me, I think maybe 2.5-inch thick treads, white oak.
Oh yeah,
beautiful stuff.
Yep.
What I had a problem with is all the protection was loose.
Ah, yeah.
So you had your 1/4-inch whatever material that was stapled to plastic,
right?
And as you're walking, and I know this from experience, is that dirt will get underneath there, and as you walk on it, it moves. That protection moves.
Correct.
You're now creating a nice distressed look on this beautiful white oak, right?
Yes.
And he was trying to repair it as we were going along, but it's not really his duty to do that. That stuff is supposed to be fixed and stabled and staying right in put. So then you only have to fix those 6 or 8 holes that are holding that piece of protection, right?
Yes, yes, correct.
And it was such a shame, right?
It is, it is. And, you know, I've seen a fair share too where they're missing, you know, nosing covers too.
Yeah.
And, right, like you have the step cover, but people, you know, the foot's always touching the nosing of the stairs, right? And end of the, like when you tear that off, for sure you're gonna have marks on there.
Then you get, then it's gonna fall to either the wood flooring guys or the painter guys.
Yes.
That are here. You gotta fix this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's challenging to fix stuff like that sometimes to make it look like when you've already had a client that bought into the white oak mentality of like this is the beautiful grain that we want.
Yes.
Right. And they saw photographs as a certain thing, and this is what they wanted to achieve. I understood why they had that open concept.
Yeah.
I mean, but you are talking about solid white oak here. Yeah. It was just ridiculously thick and beautiful. And I was just like, this is a shame that this protection is not being cared for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he gave me a little bit of education on a 4-inch waistline run. It's not all that often you get into a residential, and I saw a 4-inch ABS waist. Right. And I was like, Sam, what's going on there? Why is there a 4? And then he started giving me the whole spiel about how if you get 3 toilets and the 3rd toilet has to connect on the same run.
Correct.
From the moment the 3rd gets connected on it, you got to go a Y off the 3 and right. Then connect it to now a 4. And then he started explaining to me based on the code is that they're not worried about the amount of water running down those drain lines, and it's on a horizontal application. So
okay.
The moment that you got to move this water on a horizontal, you have to upgrade to a 4. And it's not about the volume of water that's moving there. It's the volume of air that is required to move the water.
Right.
So if you kept it 3, the theory, and plumbing does this, and OBC building code does this a lot.
Right.
They assume those 3 toilets are all going to flush at the exact same time, and you're going to have this mad rush of water moving down there, which is going to remove the amount of volume of air to make that water move,
right.
Which is not always the case. Most likely it's going to be 1, then the 2nd, then the 3rd, or whatever. But in the code, you have to have, I think he was saying it was like 65 water to 35 air, volume-wise. So that's why they had to increase it to a 4.
Wow.
And then I asked them, well, here's a funny question for you. You're doing this on the 3rd toilet. When do you have to increase the 4-inch? And he goes, not for another 12 toilets. And I'm like, so in my opinion, the OBC is just going a little too extreme.
Yeah.
Where it's the same thing about a shower application. If you have so many heads on a shower application, it's the volume of water that's coming out of all those heads. You have to start increasing that shower drain now to a 3-inch.
Right.
Most residential applications, you can't fit a 3-inch P-trap underneath. Could be a I-joist of a 12-inch, 11.7/8, you still can't fit a 3-inch P-trap.
No.
But based on the numbers, if you have all those heads going and you're moving that much water, then you're going to need a 3-inch trap.
Yeah.
And I've tested it, I've seen it, and I'm like, you do not need it. But the code is saying that you do need it, right?
Right. And I, you know, every year, all that stuff, code is changing.
Are you going online to pay attention to code? Or you?
We get a code book through school.
You have the book, right? Yes.
Yeah, they're hard on the code book, yeah.
Really?
Well, when you do your CFQ, you are given you have to get through the section 9 of the building code. They give you the book. Part 9.
Yeah.
And they give you a few questions, and you gotta find that. And they really were on you. So they were talking in school not to use little sticky notes on the pages of where stuff is, because they want you to be able to use that index and use that first section to find it.
That's not right. Because part 9 is a lot of the same applications over and over on different projects.
Right.
You're going to come across the exact same things.
Right.
So why can't you post a note it and I go, listen, it's the same thing here. You want to be ready to address if an inspector's asking you a question.
Right.
Flip right to it. Okay, I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
I've been through this before.
Yeah. I understand it on the educational side of things. They want you to fully understand how the book works. But really, at the end of the day,
they need to educate how to use the book to begin with. I mean, and to be all fair, they don't even know how to use it, right? Like, there's no way they know every single part of that book.
Not at all. And you want to be efficient with it. So, like, if you're using it day to day, have your sticky note, because you're not going to sit there flip for 10 minutes trying to find something. So
quickly turn digital measurements into efficiency gains for your business. With iGUIDE, you can turn around DWG floor plans within 48 hours, easily share project files with partners, and create 3D walkthroughs for your clients. Stop struggling with inaccurate measurements, manual processes, and inefficient project planning and collaboration. Discover how you can boost productivity and cut costs with a virtual demo. Visit goiguide.com/AEC to connect with an iGUIDE specialist.
Yeah.
Well, it's good that they're hard on you guys to understand it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole course pretty much on it. We are doing everything from looking at charts, calculating beam sizes, floor joist size, footing thicknesses, projections, everything. So, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's valuable information.
It is. It is.
Like, and it's also hard to wrap your head around it too, right?
It is, yeah.
Because it's challenging to look at that.
Right.
Are they giving you different kinds of scenarios when you're actually addressing it? So when you're seeing different drawings, you're reverting back to?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Yep. They'll give you drawings. They give you, you know, word problems. You got to use the math. You got to use your equations. Everything, really. Yeah. They incorporate it all. It's a design and, like, engineering design kind of course that's part of the apprenticeship. So drawings, code book, that kind of deal.
Yeah, see, here's the thing that I have. Like, I have an issue with not putting the post-it notes on there, right? Because they're not expecting you to use Abacus, right?
Right.
To do any calculations, you're going to be using calculators and you're going to look at tables.
Correct.
You're going to pull up a table.
Yep.
And you're going to know exactly based. And also, these days, a lot of it's coming from manufacturers that are creating these materials.
Right.
And where their spans are coming from. You're not even... I remember early on, I was having plenty of conversations with the inspectors. I was like, listen, I spoke to the manufacturer and here's their engineer specs. They've already signed off on this. They know exactly what the span is. They know exactly where I can make holes in this.
Yeah.
This is not in the code book. It's always about manufacturer specs, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and especially with built up beams. I mean, everything's LVL now. Everything's engineered drawing. So, you know, the lengths, the widths, everything's there. So I don't know.
I'd be curious. I mean, I love going back to your house, man, because I love those older homes. I'd be curious to see what the new construction of today with all the LVLs and everything that they've done, if we're going to see any kind of similar deflections of the older homes that were built with 2x4s and simple lumber practices.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if a lot of the issues come from just wait times and lumber yards or how that all works, but it just seems like, you know, LVLs are great and all, but they still move a bit. And with these older beams, I don't know if they were brought in already dried out, stiff, ready to go or not, but I'm not sure.
Well, here's the thing. I'm sure that, you know, you're not a roof guy, right? So you don't spend a lot of time on the roof.
Not much.
I've spent my fair share on roofs, right? And I could be blindfolded walking on a roof, and I'll tell you if it's a modern-day construction roof where it's like engineered roof trusses, 24 on center.
Yep.
You hope they're 24 on center.
Right.
And then these days, I guess it's 5/8, but earlier on, not too long ago, back in the late 80s, early 90s, it was 3/8 OSB.
Right.
And you can walk on that roof and it is spongy to the point where it's like, am I on a trampoline?
Yeah.
And then versus I can walk on an older house, 100 years old, that's hand cut rafters and 3/4-inch diagonal planks of pine or spruce, and you're walking on that, there's no sponginess going on there.
Not at all.
And I'm like, why are we relying so much on... That's where my question about the engineer, what's it going to be like 100 years from now? Where am I going to start to see all this deflection? Are these engineer... We see it already with uplift.
Yeah.
Like we told you, when they drop all the engineer roof trusses on there, there's always a gap.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's weird because, you know, I take a look at my attic and, you know, the amount of the lack of bracing and, you know, tie crosses, all that stuff. There's nothing, you know, it's just rafter and wood.
Scary.
Ridge board and a rafter and that's
scary.
But yet, you know, it holds up. It's strong. they were doing something right. I don't know what it is, but maybe that it's true dimensional. I don't know, but yeah.
I've had these arguments with engineers and with inspectors. Old house, 2x4, traditional 2x4.
Yeah.
Actual. That was your ridge beam.
Yeah.
And then you're replacing it with a 16-inch 4-ply LVL.
Yep.
Bolted.
Yep.
I'm like, dude.
Nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, really?
I know.
And the cost associated with that. I can understand the 2x4.
Yeah.
Let's upsize it at 2x10. Let's even go crazy with double or even triple ply, right?
Like, right.
Maybe. But the 16, and it was about the length. It was about the span of the length, right? How there was no load in between, so it was carrying a lot.
Right.
And then finally the engineer was explaining to me that it was, that's why I asked you about your neighbors.
Right.
Every engineer is looking at the parameters of there's no dwelling next to you.
Right.
So there's no horizontal force pushing on it.
Correct.
But if you've got neighbors, those soften that force. Right. So all of a sudden, you know, you don't get that. And that's why, right? That's the reason behind it.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
It's always, I mean, every day is a learning experience. That's the thing about it, right?
It is. Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's nice. It's nice in my place because I get to see that, wow, you know, it only took that and now it's holding up 100+ years. So.
Got to say something to how it was built back then.
It does.
And it was, I don't know how involved the engineers were at the time.
You know, I think the biggest part of it was time. It's not as rushed. It's not as, you know,
100%,
it's,
man.
It's just, you know, it's, they're building a house. They're not here to make the craziest amount of profit. They're building a house. They want it done correctly. You know, their cuts are perfect. Their nailing is perfect. So
here's a scenario that I'm curious about. Back then, okay, we know what the rates are for today, right? So we know that a lot of the workmanship that's done, it's piece, right? So
yes.
All of a sudden you're getting so many, you're only getting compensated so much money and you got so many projects to do and you got so little time, so you got to get it done, which means that you cut corners.
Right.
Simple as that, right? But then you hear about these builders that are making all kinds of money.
Right.
But then they cry about all these government, you know, fees that are associated with all kinds of structures that are being built, residential, what have you, high rise or what have you. So it's like the government's taking a huge amount of fees attached to the project. So the builder says that they're not making as much money as you think they are.
Right.
I'm wondering, I'm trying to figure out back then, were the ratios similar or were they fairer between the tradesperson and the builder and the lack of government? Because I don't think those fees, especially here in Ontario, they didn't have those fees back then.
Oh, probably not. No, not at all. I would say everything is just, you know, everyone's there just to do their job. No one back then was probably worrying about, you know, how much they're going to make on it or how much, you know.
But the tradesperson was making a fair wage for the day that they were providing, the skill that they were providing.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I think the builder was making a fair profit.
Yes.
On the projects that they were delivering. And I think what has changed is that the government is like, it's something stupid. I think it's like 35% of the cost of a home here in Ontario is going to pay the government.
Right.
To build that structure.
Right. It's
hard.
It is. It is. And, you know, I can't really give a clear answer on that. I don't know if back then, you know, even acquiring land was much easier as well.
Probably.
But, yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
I recently learned something about, I think it's Ontario. If you own one property and you end up buying the property right next to you.
Right.
It's now considered in the government's eyes as one lot.
Right.
So you can't sell both properties separately. You have to actually go through the paperwork of severing the lot now, which is just stupid and sounds like a cash grab coming from the government.
Yeah. They find every way to get you on something. It's just how it is nowadays. Yeah.
Then they're also on the back end barking that we need more tradespeople to come into the construction industry. Well, you guys should be making the construction industry a lot easier to work in.
Absolutely.
And run a business in and profit in. Because you guys are profiting.
Yes.
We're not profiting.
No. I know. It's everything from code to hiring process. School, they've made school longer. It's four terms now instead of three. So
you're paying more for your schooling.
It's doubled tuition. Yeah, since I went the first time, it's now doubled.
Since the time that you were there?
Yeah, so I went, my first term would have been in 2021. It was $400 for the 2 months of school. Last December I got back, it was $860, I think. Yeah,
around there. What was their reasoning for that? Nobody questioned why it was more?
I couldn't get an answer out of anyone. No. I'm not sure if it was just Fanshawe or if it was, you know, Ontario-wide. I'm not sure, but yeah. Plus on top, you got to buy textbooks, which are $100 a piece. So the whole idea of getting into the trades, earn while you learn, well, they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot for that initial startup, because now you're forking out $1,400, $1,200 to get started in school. So I don't know. I haven't got a clear answer on that yet, but yeah.
So this is what I mean, is that you start pushing people that were very interested in getting in out of it, even before they got started.
Exactly.
Which is the worst thing that can happen in this industry.
Yeah.
We're already up for challenges, like where people are not thinking this is the best option on the table.
Right. And it's, yeah, I don't know. And as far as the longer school session, I don't know if that's for just better preparation for the CFQ, if they think guys need a longer term, but you know, that's just more tuition pay now as well. So
are you guys nervous to approach older tradespeople and just pick their brain outside of Covenant? So like if you're at a function, if you're at a trade show, you're at a trade related event or something like that, there's all kinds of PKs going on all the time.
Right.
Are you guys nervous to approach the older trades?
Me personally, no. I have such a passion for every trade.
Yeah.
I want to know more in every aspect. But for some guys, I would say so. Yeah. Because they've been doing their own method where they work for so long that maybe the fear of saying the wrong thing or voicing their opinion on something might be embarrassing for them. But I would say so for some. Yeah.
Listen, I know seasoned guys that make mistakes.
Oh, everyone
right? Everyone makes some mistakes or maybe they say something that's not exactly true.
Right.
It's a little bit off or whatever, and they got to double check it.
Right.
That's construction. That's what we're supposed to be doing, right?
Absolutely.
And every GC, so to speak, doesn't know all the inner workings of every single trade. No. They certainly don't know every single code.
No.
So it's like, go back to the younger generation. Just don't worry. Like, they will not know everything, so you shouldn't know everything. And you will never not know everything either, right?
Correct.
Simple as that.
Right.
But I get why they're afraid of it, right? Just to speak up and...
It is, you know. I've had a few moments where it's like, you know, I think I know the answer, but I'm not 100% sure. So, you know, it takes a minute to really get it out of me, but, you know.
How would I handle it? I would like... No, I think on my sites, we were always just kind of open and collective, or we were always just trying to pick our brains. And the best parts were like sometimes you come up and the inspection was coming through and maybe something didn't pass because of this.
Right.
And it was a questionable item, right? So right. All of a sudden you bring it up and you're like, listen, can we have a discussion here? I'm not pointing fingers, whatever, but you're here, the inspector.
Right.
We respect you. And the drawings are here. And then we've got the trade that's handling the scope. And then I'm the GC. So let's just have an open conversation about this. I'm not looking to point fingers.
Correct.
But let's just try to figure out, like, okay, there are some things that I have come across on drawings where it's like the city didn't realize it.
Right.
And the city didn't, you know, all of a sudden catch it.
Yeah.
So now the inspector's catching it on site because now you're translating drawings into actual. And now they're asking you to do something based on what the code is all about.
Right.
But... You know, like the code in general is a blanket.
It is.
It's not designed for every single structure. It's a blanket to address all the structures, right?
Right.
So let's have a conversation and then let's come to a conclusion where we meet what we need to achieve. Not a matter of you just get this done.
Right.
And it falls on you now as a GC, which is going to in turn fall on the trades, right?
Yes, exactly.
To do it.
And, you know, I think there's also a misunderstanding when it comes to the code and renovations because... You know, we've ran in a couple times of things like not having Tyvek wrapped under your bottom plates and stuff like that. And it's hard to explain to them that this is previous build. We're not touching this. How is it possible to get that done?
How do you want us to do this though?
Right. You know, certain things like I ran into one where there was a window in the side of the wall, but the way the roofing system worked, there was no load on the wall at all. It was actually sitting on the interior wall and the window was kind of in the exterior brick. So she wanted point loads all under the window. And unfortunately enough, the basement was open. We didn't have to tear anything open. But we tried to explain, you know, that there's no load on this window. It's there for a reason. It's been framed like this forever. We'll show you up in the ceiling what it's built like. But still, you know, they see a window on a wall, on an exterior wall, and they're like, you know, point loads.
So she was just looking for a header, a king and jack?
Yes.
And it wasn't there?
It was there, but no point loads underneath. But we just put it in to be, we put the header and jack and king in to be, like, to do it correctly. But as far as underneath, there was no point of doing anything there because.
So she was requesting for the point loads to carry down all the way.
Yeah.
But you're not renovating the below parts?
No. A lot of little things like that.
Yeah, but they can't just, that's what I mean, is like you gotta work together, right? You can't just say.
Yes, it's, you know, they're smart people. The younger ones, they go by the book a bit, you know, too much. What I think needs to happen is they need to have a better understanding that renovations are a tad bit different. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's we're not getting into, but it happens to be there. And it's been like that. It's we can fix it, but some of the stuff that, you know, they announce sometimes is like.
Hey, architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired.
It's unnecessary.
See, but here's the argument about by the book. I understand that it's by the book, but I was just saying earlier that it's a blanket.
Right, it is, yes.
Every structure is different. Like there's been so many times I was like, how are you supposed to seal that? How are you supposed to insulate that?
Right.
How are you supposed to tape all it? Like, it just, you keep on coming up with these questions. How are you supposed to be doing this?
Right.
And then they'll ignore other little details, right?
They will, yeah.
And so it's like and it's not that we're asking you to be by the book by every single thing. It's a question mark on how much we can address.
Right.
Because there's some things that are drawn and then built that can't be addressed.
Right. And that's something they work, like obviously a younger inspector, that's something they'll work on. They get that understanding at a certain point in their career. But, you know, at first everyone wants to be perfect at their job to make sure they give off the great reputation for whoever they work with. But it comes with experience probably with them to get that understanding of what it, just because in the book it says this doesn't mean it can be done here.
I joked about it. I'd love to be an inspector.
Yeah.
Because it just, like, first of all, I wouldn't be by the book.
No.
Right? I would understand.
Right.
Construction.
That's, yeah.
I would just show up on site. I would just go through whatever has to be inspected at and look at it. And obviously, if there's glaring issues, like if I don't see a header, if I don't see a king or a jack or anything like that, I'm like, guys, what's going on here? Why am I even here?
Right.
Right? But I'm like, listen, just throw a point there, whatever, let's go, move on, we're done,
right.
Sign off on it. And right. Like I understand where the trades people are coming from.
Yes.
And I think that's the biggest fault there about the inspectors, is that you read a book and you write a test. I think there should be a third component. You need to spend a certain amount of time on construction sites.
Yes, absolutely. That would be essential, because you won't learn what you need to learn just in school.
No.
Stuff, because you need to see it. And like you said, every house is different. And once you come across all those differences, it'll be well-rounded.
We just proved it. We just talked about it. Like, you take a drawing, it doesn't necessarily look the same way on the building, and that's it.
Exactly.
But then you get the fiasco where it's like certain structures get approved. And I've seen inspectors come on site and they're there for an inspection. They don't even look at the thing that I'm waiting for them to look at.
Right.
And then they're like, yeah, this is fine. It's good. I'm gone. And that was it. And I'm like, but you never even looked at what you're supposed to look at. It's fine. It's good.
Yeah. It's some of them. Some of them can be like that. I don't know if it's a level of confidence or.
I was always prepared.
Yeah.
In anticipation of they're going to find something to tell me that has to be addressed.
Right.
So you do the work, you do the homework, you prepare, you have everything accessible so they can walk around. But then they just show up and just blink and then go. And you're like,
it's, you know what? Covenant, personally, we don't run into that too often. We do have a good reputation of we're always doing things correctly.
Yes.
Yeah, so of course. Definitely inspectors are coming in not needing to, you know, scour everything. But, you know, a good one still needs to do their job and look at it anyways, for sure. But, you know, I've seen a couple where they're probably, you know, they just look around and go, all right, sweet, I'm out of here.
See, the problem about me being an inspector is I probably want to join in.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's, I bet you there's rules where the inspectors are not allowed to join in. Like, I'll give you guys a hand lifting a wall or something. Yeah. Like, stuff like that, right? And
yep.
I'd be like, I don't think I'm allowed to do any of this stuff. And then I'll probably get a yellow card or something like that. You know, or get sent down to HR and be like, man, you can't do what you just did. And I was like, what did I do? I just helped the guys out. They needed an extra body. I wanted to help out. Here I go. I'm helping them out. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
You can't do that. No. We're on this side of the fence. They're on that side of the fence. We have to let them know that there's a fence.
Yeah.
Well, who built the fence and who's inspecting it at that point? I would just be rocking the boat, man. That's just like, that's how I would be doing it. I think I have addressed everything, man. How conscious are you guys about safety, PPE?
Huge.
Huge, right? It's a big deal.
Yeah.
School teaches that as well, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
And obviously Covenant is big on it as well, too. They want you guys to be vibrant, older tradespeople, right?
Yes.
Not health issues, not chronic issues, nothing, right?
No. Yeah. Dan actually takes care of most of that for us for health and safety. Yep. So he's always pushing, you know, job site inspection forms. Want to do that every 3 weeks. Go through your job site. Make sure you have your harness, your hard hat. No trip hazards. Check your ladders.
Make sure they're in good condition.
Correct.
Because there could be a cut or a fray or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Check your ladders, check your cords, everything. So they do a very good job there. Yeah, absolutely. And if you need something, you know, you're short on respirators, short on hard hat, anything.
Filters, whatever.
It's there within a day.
For goggles is a big one.
Yes.
Even with goggles, I've heard so many stories, and it happened to me as well. Piece of metal can sneak right around it.
Absolutely.
And get to you, right? Get to your eyes. So I'm glad that you guys are aware of it, that you guys are paying attention to that, right?
Yeah.
It's important. And I would say especially like the dust, the airborne dust particles, right?
Well, you know, I get it. Some things can slow you down in a way, you know, harness, respirator, whatever. It's uncomfortable. I understand. But end of the day, you got to look at 20 years from now and be like, do I want to be waking up coughing every day? Do I want to be out of breath after a short walk? You know, do I want to have a missing eye or bad eyesight? No hearing.
Hearing is a big one.
Right. It's just no way to live. I mean, you want to enjoy your retirement. You want to be healthy. So
I think it's the hearing and the breathing that a lot of tradespeople take for granted.
Yes.
And it's like, I notice now that I'm in my 50s, if there's airborne dust and I'm not wearing a mask, I'll get a tickle in my throat where it's like, I almost like have to cough.
Yeah.
Where when I was much younger, I didn't care, right? Like you would just like walk around and there you go. But I think that because I did that, I get so sensitive to airborne dust, right?
Right.
And then same with the hearing. Like we always use the impact guns or the DeWalt oscillating tool.
Yep.
And those things are friggin' scary loud. They're way above than, you know, normal safe conditions for your hearing.
Right.
And if you're doing that on a weekly basis, daily basis, if you're a stair guy, you're chopping up oscillating tools all the time. You're using that stuff. Yep. Flooring guys, same thing, right? There's no such thing as silencers for these tools.
No.
And then you're going to have issues in your hearing later on, right?
Exactly. And it's not something too. And when it starts happening, it's happening and you're not going to reverse it. So
you can't fix it at that point, right? No. The eye protection is one thing. It's always there. There's always an unfortunate situation where something snuck by.
Yeah.
Or you were stupid enough to not be wearing any at all.
Right.
Because whatever reason, they're fogging up. It's too cold. They were getting too dusty. I couldn't see. Correct. So you just take them off for that split second. That split second is what changes your life.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
It happens.
But I'm glad that I'm hearing you say that you guys are very, very self-aware of it, that this is critical. It's important, man. Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, Dan's good job with it. Yeah, he takes care of it.
Did you do the tiling in your bathroom, the subway tile?
I did.
Your door, Dan? Look good. It's on the vaulted ceiling.
Yes.
Look sharp.
Yeah. It was an old closet, actually, and
a
little step up in there. But, yeah, it was, you know, I only did a couple of showers with Dan before then, so I was guessing on a little bit of it. It was more of a trial and error kind of
deal. What was the guessing part?
Well, just the mostly layout. mostly layout, getting everything lined up. You know, niche in the right spot, getting your corners wrapped around correctly, no thin little slices. I had a few issues there, but it actually, I was lucky. It turned out pretty nice. So
next up is herringbone.
Yeah.
That still frustrates me, man.
I haven't got a chance to do it yet with Dan. So
you'll scratch your head so many times, and Dan knows it. He knows this. You'll be like, why is it veering off, man? I started plumb, and why is it veering off? And then you quickly start realizing that not every tile is exactly the same size. You put the spacers in there, and one row, and then all of a sudden it starts to veer off, and you're like, yeah, every tile's slightly different.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's where the veering off is coming from, right?
Yeah. Seems to be becoming more of an issue, too. Like
the quality of material?
Oh, it's getting bad for tile.
I think they're baking them too fast, or they're rushing them to get out to market.
Yeah, because, you know, with the bigger set ones, we're having a problem with almost like a curvature to them where you look down in it and it's
that's always a given, man.
Yeah, and it's bowed, or, you know, like you said, the different sizes, it's been an issue.
Then you get a client asking you to do a stagger pattern, and you're like, well, have a seat. We're going to have a conversation about stagger pattern with this large format porcelain tile.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you, here's a level. This thing is bang on straight.
Yeah.
Let me put it up against your tile here.
Yeah.
Your tile, get me an arrow. I can use it now. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's how bad it's getting. I know. I've seen it.
It's, yeah. And I don't think it is a case of like, oh, more expensive tile is better. It's all the same. It's all the same.
I'm curious, on your floor in the kitchen, are you going to keep it hardwood? Are you going to keep it? Are you going to make it tile?
It's unfortunately, it's hardwood now, but it's beat. I'm thinking of just doing a light kind of LVP natural look.
Okay.
And just run that through the main floor section.
Makes sense.
I do have the little thin slat hardwood right now, but the living room side of it's carpet, and it actually has old linoleum under it. So I have no way to really continue that on or make it look too nice, so...
Would you skin the whole floor? Start from fresh, a new floor?
Possibly, yeah. Do a top coat of like quarter inch ply or something like that.
Just skin it so then you start from scratch kind of thing, and then just decide on something that you want to use, which makes sense to just carry it all the way through.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I'll get frowned upon for, you know, going over hardwood like that, but it just doesn't work out in my situation.
It's almost the best thing to do.
Yeah.
I think in that situation, right?
Yeah. It also helps insulation factor too, because I hear my water heater kick on. I hear everything kick on. It's so loud through that floor. So maybe a couple more layers might help out with that a little bit. But
is it forced air? It's forced air?
No, I actually have a boiler.
You got a boiler?
Yeah.
You're going to keep that, right?
I am. It was brand
new. You got rads and everything?
I do.
Oh, you're going to keep them, right?
Yes. Yeah, I got the boiler right when I moved in. I had to get it to get insurance actually for the house because it was so rotted out, the old one.
Oh, you get to get a new one.
Yeah, they actually wouldn't give me my mortgage yet till I got a new one in. Yeah, so.
But that's a better system than forced air, man.
I love it, yeah. I mean, once I fix my drafty windows and everything,
you'll be fine.
Yeah.
That home would be beautiful, comfortably beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wish that the OBC would just mandate that that's how we should go from now on, but they're not going to do that.
No. It's such a better type of heat because, you know, you don't get that stuffy hot air. I hardly have to dust. I hardly have to do anything. And it's a comfortable heat. Yeah.
I know all that, man. Yeah. Trust me. I know all that. It makes so much sense. I disagree with forced air. North America is a forced air nation, country, continent, whatever it is. And I never agreed with it. Ever agreed with it.
And part of me too comes back to that sound issue. Like if I had a furnace, I'd hear that throughout the whole house kick on. It would be loud, you know, crazy loud. So.
We've all done this as kids. You're like talking into the ductwork and you can hear it all the way into the basement. It's like, how did that work? Yeah. It's like, it's a highway.
Oh, yeah.
There's a metal highway through your whole house. Everyone can hear what's going on inside these ductworks, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. And, you know, if I got the house insulated, I know it'd help a bit, but, you know, the boiler's still quiet. It's nice.
Boilers, don't ever change that, man. I think I asked you everything I was curious about, man. Anything else you want to share?
I think that's
what's on the plate for this week, for next week, sorry, for work.
I think I'm starting to head back to that job we were talking about with the compromised foundation.
Or really that one, huh?
I'm not sure what we'll be doing, but maybe just keeping an eye on all
this. Out of this.
Yeah. Exactly. Or I could be back with Dan. I'm not sure. So
that's kind of exciting that every day you just never know. You're just ready to rock and roll.
Well, yeah. And, you know, for the last couple months, it's been strictly with my boss, Randy. But recently, yeah, I've been kind of floating around. It's not bad, though. It's a nice little change, so, yeah.
Okay, well, say hi to everybody.
Yeah,
I got to do the 12 questions.
Yeah.
It's been a while since Dan's been on the show. I'd love to have him back or anybody else from Covenant. It's almost like I want to interview everybody at Covenant on this show. That's what I know Chris is coming back. He proposed something to me, and I was like, dude, I'm down for it. Like, he wanted to do a monthly segment inviting a different person and coming in and having conversations, open conversations. Like, dude, I'm down. I'm like, let's do it. Let's figure it out.
Yeah.
Because it's great to have this communication and just talking. And a lot, from what I'm being told, a lot of people are learning from the show.
Absolutely.
Which is great. So I appreciate you taking the time coming in here. Yeah. Braden Churchill here, apprentice carpenter at Covenant Construction. You can find them on IG at Braden Churchill, and then also on LinkedIn, and also Covenant Construction. You can find them all over the place as well too. And also Fenshaw.
Yeah.
As well, too.
Yeah.
You ready for these?
Yes.
What is your favorite construction word?
Favorite construction word? Probably have to be like level or plumb. Hearing that or seeing that, you know.
I actually prefer plumb over level.
Plumb over level?
Plumb sounds better than level.
It does. It does.
Least favorite tool?
Table saw.
Table saw? Scary?
Well, I was 10 years old. My grandpa was giving my first lesson on a table saw.
Okay.
And I was in the room, and he takes the end of his finger off. And ever since then, ever since I hear one start up, that's the first thing I think about.
Wow.
So it
just... kind of makes sense.
Yeah. It's not that I'm scared to use them. It just gives me, like, that flashback. So.
What construction sound do you love?
I know a lot of guys hate it, but I actually love the sound of an impact. More the lug nut kind of impact. Putting tires on, but I don't know. I
that's
like
a different sound though.
Yeah, it's
that's a sweeter sound.
It is. It is. You know, it's almost like the NASCAR sound too. Like the fast one. Yeah,
it has a more romantic tone to it.
It does.
Like an impact in between joists and your head's there.
Yeah,
that ain't a favorable sound.
No. Yeah.
Nobody's gonna take that and sample it and put on some updated track of music today. Like,
no.
That's not the sound to be using,
no.
man. But the lug nut one, you could probably hear that. Totally hear that. Favorite beverage?
Well, as far as alcohol goes, I hardly drink, so I don't really have one there. But I'd say just like Dr. Pepper. I have a thing for Dr.
Pepper. Dr. Pepper?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know why. It's just...
Do they still make it in bottles?
I don't think so, no.
America probably has a bunch of bottles. They probably sell it in bottles.
Probably.
That's like a whole Americana historical kind of thing. Dr. Pepper, wow.
Yeah.
What's the worst and best part about construction?
Worst part definitely has to be wear and tear on your body. Just keeping yourself healthy, making sure, you know, you're not overdoing it. You know, you're getting your, you know, everything looked at. That would definitely be it. Best part, just the variety of work. You know, I'm never bored. Every week is something new. There's a new stage to every job. I'm never bored.
Good. Favorite curse word? You don't swear. Do you swear?
My girlfriend's giving me heck for swearing a lot.
If you swear,
lately.
You swear. I'm not, I don't judge anybody.
I would have to say just like bullshit. Bullshit's a good one.
Bullshit's a great word. Favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Have to be my grandpa's old, it's a 1954 Mercury Ford pickup. And unfortunately, we had to sell it when he moved out of his house. Mm. And I was planning on buying it, but I got the house instead. But that truck was beautiful.
Still running? It was still running? It was still running.
Yes. He built it up frame up.
We're talking about the wheel wells as well, too?
Yes. So,
man.
Navy blue, had the red rims with white walls on it. It was beautiful.
Who has it?
We sold it to a dealership after. It's in the showroom, actually.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
He probably took care of it.
Yes, he did. Yeah. He
put wood bed?
Yes.
Oh, man.
And the wood sides on the beds as well.
Really?
Yep.
That thing's worth a lot.
Yes. Yeah. It was sad. But he did, I mean, it's all by word, but he did say the day he does get rid of it, he'll come to us first if we want to buy it back. So hopefully.
Never know.
Never know.
That's a beautiful truck. It That's is. A beautiful vehicle. What do you miss from your childhood?
I'd have to say playing hockey.
Street hockey? Or ice hockey?
Ice hockey, yeah. It was just something to look forward to after school and weekends, having the tournaments with the guys, you know, traveling with my family. It was fun. I miss that.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Definitely had to be a fireman.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Either join the volunteer with my dad or, do something in a big city. Yeah, for sure.
That reminds me, I got to get in touch with, I'm trying to remember his name now, Dan. He's a recently retired fireman.
Oh, yeah.
And he's doing construction now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, firemen have a great pension.
They do.
So he's gone into construction now, and he was actually working on his own property. And this was like a year or two ago. And I was like, man, you got to get on the show. I want to talk to you, man, about firemen to construction.
Yeah.
To building your own stuff.
Yeah.
What profession would you not like to do?
It'd have to be driving instructor. That would be the worst. And I get it. Everyone's starting out, but there's some people out there that just shouldn't be driving.
You just don't. It's like construction. You're like, I don't understand how they figured out how to build it this way.
Yes.
And you're like, I don't understand how you're driving this vehicle this way. I don't get it.
I give a lot of props to those guys because it's, yeah.
Patience, man.
Oh, yeah.
And, terrible. And I guess loss of possible life. That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
You know, just had to be something just, you know, everybody in your life is proud of you and you know, take it easy.
That's it. Simple.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for making the time to come on the show and talking shop, man.
Thank you for having me.
I love having these conversations. So anyone from Covenant is welcome on the show and come back. And this is good. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
All right. That's it. We're out of here. Thanks, Angelina.